morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. Ashmore Group, first half 26 financial results. Anyway, so here's the overview. The market's done pretty well, and we've done okay as well. Generally, EM is doing really what we'd expect it to do, which is outperforming developed markets. We're at 82% of our assets outperforming in the 1 year, which is good. We're comfortable with that. Our flows have gone up, which is great. So 10% increase in assets under management over the half, which gets us to about 52 billion. Net inflows of 2 billion. Subs up 35%, reds down 39%. So things moving in the right direction, or the other way around, 39 subs, 35 reds. Our statutory profits, revenues are down year on year due to lower average AUM and reduced performance fees, which you would expect. We try and keep our costs as tight as we can, despite inflationary environment. Our investment performance on our seed has been strong. That's delivered 55 million of gains. PBT up 64% to 82 million. Diluted EPS up 90% basically to 10p. Dividend per share maintained at 4.8. Strategic stuff that we're doing is working, which is nice. Equities AUM continues to grow steadily as it has throughout the last 5 years, up 17% to 8.8 billion, which is 17% of group assets now. And local offices are also growing, up another 8% to 8.4 billion, which is 16% of group assets. Those two trends we expect to continue, steady growth in those places. Macro for us is pretty good. And we think that will continue. So economic growth is pretty solid in the larger EM economies in particular, which is where we see most interesting things going on. Pretty high rates and steady deflationary pressure being exported from China. We think allows for further easing. Dollars, we don't think, get any stronger from here. Geopolitics are a drama, but they've often been a drama, and in some ways quite good for EM. And a lot of opportunities across the piece. So we keep thinking active is the way to go. Sitting on an index, you guarantee yourself a problem at some point. Update on the performance in particular. Obviously, dollar weakness, dollar collapse isn't great, but dollar weakness is good for us. It's a tailwind. So good absolute returns in 25, better than DM, as I said. The indices are on the right. So this is ignoring us. This is just the indices. So the dollar was down 10%. The MSCI World Equity Index was up about 20, and EM Equity was 30, and Frontier 40%. So strong equity outperformance. And then on global bonds were about 5 or 6. External debt was about 12, 13. And EM local currency was about 20, and corporate was just a little bit better than DM. So across the piece, index, no judgment required. Better year for the 12 months of December 25 in EM over DM. What else is going on? US tariffs are what they are, generally inflationary and not positive for global trade, but what it has done is push intra-EM trade up quite a lot, and we see more of that coming. If anything, more intra-EM reforms and progress in terms of making stuff easier to do, which I think is great. Geopolitical risk has calmed down a wee bit until it hasn't. But it, you know, a lot of the drama is out there, and people are aware of it. Currency generally has underpinned equity and local currency in particular, and we're seeing that in terms of client appetite too. Continuing appetite for local currency bonds and for equities. Spread compressions helps. Developed markets, I think we all know the problems, right? Lots of debt, fiscal deficits. Politicians trying to issue paper to kick the can down the road. Valuations expensive. And policy uncertainty. Just summarizing performance for you, we like to do this just to give you a sense. As you know, we split between global and local businesses here. These are the main themes. So the 1 year, we're up 82% outperforming, which is good. We're happy with that. The good news is we're also outperforming where we see most interest in raising capital, which is in local bonds and in equities, both global equities and actually local equities. So that's good to have. So overall, as a group, we're now up above 80%, 3 years at 70, and 5 years at 58 as the very strong recovery from 21 drops out. But this is not an issue. This is all saleable. I think this is Tom.
Sorry. Thank you. Okay, so starting as usual with a high-level financial summary for the period, characterized by strong investment performance, continued operating efficiency, and consequently strong growth in statutory earnings. Adjusted net revenue was 16% lower year-on-year, reflecting the impact of reduced average AUM levels and lower performance fees compared with a year ago, given fewer asset realizations from the alternatives vehicles in this half. Total operating costs marginally increased by 1% as we continue to focus on operating efficiently across the group's global network of offices, and variable remuneration was accrued at 32.5% of pre-bonus profit. Consequently, adjusted EBITDA of £20.9 million delivered an operating margin of 31%. The combination of strong markets and Ashmore's investment outperformance mean that the seed capital portfolio generated pre-tax profits of £55.4 million, leading to a 64% increase in profit before tax to £81.9 million. Therefore, diluted EPS rose 89% to 10.1 pence per share, and excluding the seed capital returns, diluted EPS was 3.1 pence. The balance sheet remains well capitalised and highly liquid, with excess financial resources of £480 million, or 67 pence per share. And finally, as Mark mentioned, the board has declared an unchanged interim dividend of 4.8 pence per share. Looking at the local offices, during the half we've continued to develop the network in key emerging economies. These businesses are exposed to high growth markets and also provide real diversification, has been demonstrated again in this period. Looking at each office in turn, Ashmore Colombia delivered 16% growth in AUM, reflecting strong absolute and relative performance in its listed equity strategies. During the period, the business broadened its product offering with the launch of a regional LATAM equity strategy, and has been investing the most recently raised private capital in infrastructure debt and private equity. Ashmore Indonesia had a notable increase in new client flows as the broader market environment improved and retail distribution initiatives were implemented. In Ashmore India, the team's high-quality long-term performance track record continues, and the near-term focus is on deepening onshore distribution access for retail investors. And finally, while Saudi Arabia had some institutional redemptions early in the half, the business continues to diversify with the launch of a second private equity fund focused on education, and is also broadening its client reach through the use of digital distribution. In terms of the two newer offices, Ashmore Qatar is now fully operational, supporting the group's investment management capabilities in the region and deepening local institutional relationships. And regulatory approval for Ashmore Mexico is anticipated shortly, allowing the team on the ground to exploit the growth opportunity arising from recent pension reforms. Alongside continuing to build scale in the existing local operations, we'll continue to look for opportunities to expand this network over time. In terms of the aggregated financial performance, management fees were broadly in line year on year, while performance fees were lower, reflecting the successful realisation of alternatives investments in Colombia and Saudi Arabia that generated performance fees of approximately £7 million in the prior year. While asset realisations from the older private equity vintages are ongoing, meaning that performance fees are possible, the timing of these is inherently uncertain. The implementation of a consistent global operating model means that the local businesses achieved a 45% EBITDA margin and are delivering increasing profitability as assets under management locally grow. Looking at the group's assets, the total of £52.5 billion increased by 10% over the period, driven by Ashmore's investment outperformance, which added £2.6 billion, and net inflows of £2.3 billion delivered across both the global and local businesses. Subscriptions increased by 39% year on year to $5.7 billion, reflecting higher client engagement levels over the course of 25, and increasing recognition that EM is outperforming, the attractive absolute and relative valuations on offer, and therefore a realisation that global portfolio allocations need to change. The subscriptions activity was broad-based and includes both the funding of new client mandates, notably in equities, external debt and blended, and existing clients increasing allocations across the group's range of fixed income and equity strategies. Client demand was also geographically diverse, with equity flows from European clients and Asian clients allocating to sovereign fixed income strategies. There are also encouraging signs that US investors are now considering reallocating away from their home market. Reduced redemptions also contributed to the net inflow, with a 35% decrease year on year to 3.4 billion in the half. Indeed, this is the lowest half year redemption level since 2010 and reflects the latter stage of what has been a reasonably lengthy EM flow cycle. Looking forward, Ashmore has started 2026 with a healthy client pipeline, reflecting the positive market environment of recent years, the outperformance being delivered by Ashmore's active investment management, and a growing realization by investors that emerging markets warrant a higher allocation. The caveat, as ever, is that the timing of funding can be uncertain. Turning now to revenues, the year-on-year decline of 16% is attributable to a 3% lower average AUM level and reduced performance fees compared with the level delivered from asset realizations a year ago. Net management fees were 9% lower year-on-year at 62.1 million, with the movement attributable in roughly equal measure to the average asset level, an FX headwind from a stronger sterling, and an average fee margin that is 2 basis points lower than a year ago. The year-on-year movement in the management fee margin is entirely due to the full run rate impact of flows in the prior year period, i.e. the 6 months to December 2024. The reported margin in this half of 34 basis points is unchanged compared with the 6 month period to June 25 and was broadly stable over the period. Management fee margins at the investment theme level were also relatively stable, with the exception of alternatives, where the first half margin was impacted by the return of higher margin capital to investors, coupled with the investment cycle of recently raised private debt capital that is not yet earning full run rate management fees. On a pro forma fully invested basis, the alternatives margin is approximately 110 basis points. As mentioned, the first half performance fees of £0.8 million are lower than the prior year period. I continue to forecast up to £5 million of performance fees in the current financial year, excluding any contribution from alternatives realisations in the second half. And finally, other income of £4.6 million increased due to the generation of transaction fees in the period. I would expect this source of revenue to revert to more normal levels in the second half of the year. In terms of operating costs, we continue to operate an efficient business model globally, and total operating costs of £48.3 million were broadly consistent with the prior year period. There was a modest increase in salary costs to £16.1 million, primarily reflecting recruitment in the group's local businesses, including the establishment of the new office in Mexico. Other operating costs were reduced by 2% to £10.9 million, notwithstanding the preparations for moving to a new London head office at the end of fiscal Q3. The VC accrual of 32.5% is consistent with the prior year range of 30 to 35%, and in absolute terms means a charge of £19.8 million, 1% higher year on year. As in previous years, realised life-to-date seed gains of £14.8 million and interest income of £6.8 million are included in the calculation of the VC accrual. Given neither life-to-date gains nor interest income are included in EBITDA, in this period this has had the effect of reducing the operating margin by approximately 10%. Looking to the second half, there will be a slightly higher non-cash depreciation charge reflecting the cost of the new London office lease, but overall I expect full-year non-VC operating costs to be approximately twice the first half level of £29 million. The group's seed capital programme is now well established and has meaningful scale to support the diversified AUM growth and deliver attractive through-the-cycle returns to shareholders. Seed investments now have a market value of £391 million, with mark-to-market valuations in the period benefiting from both positive markets and Ashmore's outperformance. In addition to the 391, the group has made commitments of £81 million to funds in the alternatives theme, which are likely to be drawn down over the next few years to facilitate growth in Ashmore's thematic private equity and private debt strategies. Given that many of the current seed investments have delivered positive returns and provided appropriate scale to funds, I would expect the successful realisation and recycling of existing seed investments over the coming periods to largely fund these additional commitments. While the primary goal of seed investments is to support growth in third-party client AUM, over time, the programme has also delivered meaningful profits to shareholders. In this period, the impact was a £55.4 million gain, of which £9.6 million was realised in the 6 months. In terms of new investment activity, a total of £38 million was invested in the period to support growth in private equity strategies, notably in the Middle East, and to establish new funds, including the regional LATAM equities product I mentioned at the beginning. Realisations of £47 million were achieved, principally through matching client flows into seeded equity strategies and following the return of capital by alternatives vehicles. On a life-to-date basis, these realised investments have delivered £14.8 million of gains. Finally, on the P&L, interest income of £6.8 million reflects lower average cash balances, in part reflecting the incremental seed investment activity in recent periods and prevailing short-term interest rates compared with the prior year period. The effective statutory tax rate of 13.6% is relatively low compared with the guidance of approximately 22%, largely due to mark-to-market equity gains on the seed book not being subject to UK corporation tax. On an operating basis, and taking into account the geographic mix of the group's profits, the effective tax rate remains around 22%. Turning to the balance sheet, Ashmore has total financial resources of £573.6 million, which compares with its total capital requirements of £93.3 million and means that the group continues to operate with a meaningful level of excess capital, equivalent to 67 pence per share. The balance sheet remains highly liquid with £261 million of cash at the period end, and approximately two-thirds of the seed capital investments are in funds with frequent dealing opportunities. The group's cash position is, however, relatively low with recent levels, given the seed activity, and from a cash flow perspective, the first half typically sees significant payments related to the prior financial year, namely the final ordinary dividend paid in December and employee variable compensation paid in October. Additionally, in the last 6 months, the EBT has purchased shares worth approximately £14 million. Operating cash generation tends to be stronger in the second half of the financial year, and total cash will continue to depend on the balance of seed capital investments and recycling achieved. So with that, I'll pass you back to Mark.
So outlook from here, I think things are pretty supportive actually for what we're up to. Absent some global war, I think things look pretty good. So we've on the right, we just talk a bit about bond yields and also how the equities are doing. And if you look at the bond space, those three lines are CPI, so inflation, real yield and actual yield. And as you can see, real yields are really pretty good in terms of EM. You've got positive real yields, inflation low, if anything declining, but let's say worst case flat. So there's plenty of room for EM to cut rates, but even if they don't, you've got nice positive real yields. And so we're seeing that in terms of client demand to buy local currency and local currency bonds in particular. And then on the equity side of things, after about May, June, in the year we've just had, significant index outperformance over the S&P, and if anything, started at the end of Q1, and we would expect that should be able to continue, although there has been, as I say, significant performance to this point, but the EPS story is still good and recovering in EM, so as EPS improves, share price performance tends to continue to follow it. In terms of policy and things for the year ahead, China is obviously China, and definitely can going to continue to export deflation, which may give others challenges, etc. But that is definitely the game. So inflation should remain low in China, and they should export deflation. So relatively stable growth. They have one thing probably now that they still have to fix, and they're struggling to fix, which is the property market and generating sufficient youth employment for these large numbers of people coming out of university every year. But it's feeling relatively stable in terms of their outlook from here. This is one of those years that's a big election year for EM, which tends to provide reasonable opportunities for us. Everybody lies to get elected, and EM's no different from anywhere else. And so, I'm looking through the noise tends to be quite a good time to take some risk. You know, through the first half of this year, the trick is don't get carried out in a lot of bad headlines, and start acquiring risk, subject to price, of course, but start acquiring risk at pretty good prices mid-year with a view to elections, tending to usually be mid to back end of the year, or late half one through to late December time. So a lot of LATAM elections, and that tends to be, as I say, we quite like years like this. You tend to get a little bit of negativity around headlines, and then you tend to get a chance to buy risk. So we quite like years like this. This tends to be a good time for us to add risk to make quite a lot of money in the year after. The only thing against that is if nobody lies or nobody says anything controversial. But I think we are going to get some noise around LATAM elections in particular. Monetary policy, I think, is going to get looser. As I said, high real rates and inflation under control, so I would expect to see rates continue to get cut in most places. I don't really see a dollar strength being a drama. You're going to get moments of strength, but you're going to get generally a selling trend. Just huge net liabilities in the U.S., and everybody's so long the dollar. And the way people are talking to us about what they want to buy, it's mostly non-dollar assets. So that's... it's noise around the edges, but it's the right sort of noise in terms of dollar softness. I think it's and the policy mix plus what the Fed's up to, I think, is going to continue to do that. And then AI is going to be deflationary, probably. I suspect you're going to get bottlenecks around the ability to turn massive spending into actual productivity gains. You're going to get bottlenecks in terms of the kit being available when you want it, where you want it. But it's at the margin, you would expect it to be deflationary. So that's kind of the macro outlook. Summary from where we're at, a reasonable half for us. You know, it's a good market. We outperformed. Flows are better. So increase AUM, that's nice. Flows will be two ways for a while. It always happens like that. It comes down, then it kind of bobbles along, then it goes up. So we're at a point where we should see gradually drop. This was a huge drop in redemptions. Redemptions never go to zero. So you'd expect to see redemptions fly around a bit, but generally lower. The trend is lower, and subs, definitely you'd expect, given what we're seeing in the pipeline, you'd expect to see that to continue to improve. Stat profits have been up, that's good. What we're doing strategically in terms of growing the local businesses and equity businesses, that's continued. Since 22 all the way through, we expect them to continue to grow and to change, and particularly those things. And then macro, I think, is pretty good for us. There's a relative value story, but there's also an absolute value story. So that's the broad picture. Very happy to take questions. I'll actually do the thing. Sorry, I don't want to make it. I've realized I'm already standing up. Oh, that was easy. There you go, Mike. Let me help.
Thanks, Mark. Just two questions, please. First, really good progression in fee margins over the past 6 to 12 months. Are you guys still guiding to, on a like-for-like, 1 to 2 basis point decline? I think it's every 12 to 18 months. And then on the second question, really, as you mentioned, right, redemptions coming down, subscriptions up. How does that pipeline feel in terms of, your ability to kind of repeat what we saw in Q4 in terms of flows of, around $2 billion or so, X the liquidity? Thank you.
Do you want to deal with the first one?
So, as you know, the basis point every 12 to 24 months is the best guess, having taken out the things that we can calculate that have driven any other move in terms of mix or size of product, etc. That feels like it's about right, but it's still a best guess. The market's still competitive. There is industry-wide pressure on margins. We think we're in a relatively protected part, but we're not immune to the competition or the margin erosion by osmosis, where people get a good deal somewhere else, they tend to come to us and say, can we get a better deal? So that basis point also feels about right. But as we've seen in this period, things can stabilize depending on mix and, the retail flow and what we're getting in the locals, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. It's the best guess. I mean, as the local business gets larger and as the equity business gets larger as a percentage, that kind of helps. because the fixed income tends to be priced generally cheaper. Huge sweeping statement around the world. And alternatives tend to be priced higher too. So as all those things are growing, that all helps. And the other question was?
On the pipeline.
Oh, pipeline. Yeah, the pipeline is, I think the last time we spoke, it's probably better than the last time we spoke. There are more people. It also tends to feed itself a bit. As people see this happen, they tend to sort of start saying, oh, maybe we should do a bit of that. Unfortunately, everybody follows somewhere. So pipeline, I would say, is better than the last time we spoke. If the pipeline was 10 at a screaming, raging bull market, everything is fantastic. And if it was 1 when the Russians invaded, it's probably 5. So it's not, and last time we spoke, it was probably 3. I'm hoping I said, if I meant to say that, if I didn't. Reds will be, you know, fundamentally they're trending lower, there's no question. But, you know, individual clients will have things they want to be doing. So you can't really, that's a huge drop in reds. I mean, and so we thought, oh, well, isn't that nice? But I wouldn't guarantee that drop every time. Oh, yes. King of the mic. Oh, exactly. Great. Self-help. I love that.
Hi, this is Laura Gristillo from Jefferies. So I guess on the back of Mike's question, I'm just wondering in terms of the differences you're seeing in the pipeline for institutional versus intermediary channels, and also in terms of new client mandates in EM debt versus top-ups. As I understand, top-ups are normally like easier to come around because clients don't need to do the due diligence. And my second question is on the local platforms. I've seen you have had a drop in revenues year on year and also a decrease in EBITDA margin. So any context on that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Do you want to do the second one?
So yeah, that's entirely...
I'll forget the first one.
Yeah. I'll remind you, I wrote it down. Okay. So on the locals, the drop in revenue and the margin entirely due to fewer performance fees. So we realized some assets in LATAM and in the Middle East at the beginning of the 25 financial year. It's about £7 million in total. That's in the first half. So underlying management fees broadly broadly in line. And the margin, you know, that sort of mid-40s to 50% is kind of where we would expect the aggregate to be and growing hopefully from there as the scale comes through.
And then on flow, I think you're talking about institutional over retail. An existing client over new, and I guess by products that. So in terms of institutional over retail, it's mostly, I would say, yeah, I get we're seeing flow in retail kind of begin to move a bit, but it's not, and the retail is often ahead of institutional, but it's not dramatic. Which steady, I would say steady retail interest in equity. And that is a mixture of US and other. Sporadic retail interest in local currency and some in investment grade dollars. But if retail, again, if 10 was everybody was crazy and happy and delighted and one was, they never did anything, I think retail, we're kind of still 2-3. There's a lot of retail still sucked into the US market. Institutionally, it's definitely, I would say, a stronger pipeline. And then I think the second part of the question around that was around the split between new clients, new target type things and existing top-ups. Using the last quarter as an example, it was about 50-50, I think. Is that about fair? So, but I would say the top-up clients are the ones you feel you'll get. Fortunately, we have a bunch of clients we've had for a while, and a lot of them are still at 1 out of 3. Having gone from in 22 or 23 from 3 down to 1, let's say. A lot of them are still at 1, but we've just seen some of those start to go back to 2, just beginning and talking about it. So it was 50% roughly of what happened in Q4. And it was a few people going back to 2, but they're not in any way, not that many people either. New client activity is the rest of it, and I would say the pipeline is more new client than top up at the minute. And it's more geared to equity over fixed income at the minute. But that's the kind of general statement that'll be proved wrong in 6 months' time. But that's just my sense of the last few weeks of conversation and RFPs. Did that cover all the question? Great, thank you.
Dave McKen from Deutsche Bank. couple for me, please. So first of all, on the variable comp ratio, 32.5 for the first half, would you say that's a good guide to be using for the full year and sort of thereafter? Or if not, is there a sort of a better guide you'd have there? Second, do you have any update on the performance fee guidance for this current year? You may have mentioned it, I might have missed that. And then sort of lastly, one for Mark. And obviously, there's quite a lot of passive flow come into the industry, as I'm sure you've observed. Do you think this is sort of realistically addressable for you as an active manager? Do you think there's a case that this money stays, and can you address that, or is this realistically money you can't really touch because they've gone passive? That's all they're ever going to be. Just curious on your thoughts on that.
Sundi, the first one.
Yeah.
So VC at the half year, always an accrual percentage. As we talk about every year, we top it up or we reduce it once we know what the full year result has been. So if we continue to deliver the strong levels of outperformance, we'll need to pay the investment team. There could be upward pressure on the 32. If it falls off in the second half and the 12 months has not been as good and the distribution team doesn't continue to deliver the flows that we've seen in the first half, maybe there can be some downward pressure. It's an accrual at the half year. It gets determined by the REMCO in July once the full year's numbers are known and understood. If you want an estimate for the full year at this point, 32.5 is as good as anything, but it will change come July. And then on the performance fee, so I thought I made it clear, the guidance I gave in September was for up to £5 million. The guidance I'm giving now is up to £5 million, absent something being realised somewhere in the portfolio of private equity assets that delivers a fee.
And then the passive question, some of it's permanent. I mean, some of it, people will say, well, I'll just do passive. You definitely get a bit of that. Fortunately, for what we do, some of it isn't very well replicated by passive indices. But there are some people who are just obsessed with cost and will take sort of index drift from passive, even if they haven't really thought it through. Money through consultants tends to be to not do that, because the consultants have done an enormous amount of work in this, because their initial thing is we should sell passive to some extent, although of course they want a business, so they don't want to completely kill active, so they can choose between managers. So some of it is permanent, I would say, particularly in the fixed income space, in the larger, tighter spread stuff. Some of it is definitely a first thing to just throw the cash in before they find a manager. And I think that's always been true. For us, that's more of an issue for us. Again, this is a big generalization, but more of an issue for us in fixed income, I think, than in equities. Not that there aren't indices in equities and passive things to do, but just what we're doing tends to lend itself better to active, and we're taking market share from other active, so we are in a different place than we are perhaps in some of the fixed income strategies. I don't know if that covers it. Thanks.
Ray Mail, Panmure Liberum. I suppose the only question that hasn't been asked about pipelines and flows is geography. Is there any sign that the Americans themselves are realizing they're a bit too long the dollar?
No, not really. I mean, well, that's not quite true. A little bit of retail. I mean, Americans love equities. So we've seen a dribble now. I hopefully said this earlier. There is a bit of a dribble of American retail capital into the equity products. Nothing in bonds. And then institutionally in the States, not really. Again, a bit of equity. I mean, there is a bit of an equity pipeline, but the pipeline we have is there's some U.S., but it's mostly non-U.S. There's some, but it's mostly non. So they haven't gone, it's time to have less America. That whole story of getting them from 100% America to 90% America in the 90s, we're back in that game again. Nobody gets fired for losing a lot of money and buying the wrong American stock. But they all get fired if they buy Ukraine and Russia invades. So, but I think the conversations are still there, but the retail story is picking up, and the retail tends to be a leader. Institutionally, some. But not a big wall yet. Anybody else? Okay, well, thank you very much for coming. happy to chat if that makes sense, and we'll hope to see you again in 6 months. Hopefully we'll have even better numbers. You never know. Thanks very much, everybody. Thank you.